There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 896, July 26th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Dr. Marco going to the courtyard, Castro Neves going to the brickyard. We shall explain gladly. Back to Mr. Rogers, the Doug Llewellyn of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Red Bull out for revenge in Hungary. How intense will the intensity be? We have Loosh on the loose this week with his personal opinion about this whole affair. And I'll be reading a listener email tonight on our favorite subject. And of course, I want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click the F1 support tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. And like everybody else, there was no Formula One this weekend, but we are being entertained by the intensity, foolishness, revengeful vendetta of the Red Bull. But that's the way it goes. How are things on the left coast for you, sir?
The left coast is very excited. We have a lot of dryness, no rain for many, many months, but we're hanging in there. Send us water. We need some.
Yes, sir. The clash at the British Grand Prix has become like a rolling stone, both sides stuck between a rock and a hard place, and nobody is willing to put on a kind face. The argy-bargy is still talk of the town, and soon could be heard in the Hall of Justice if Dr. Marco, who has a degree in jurisprudence, has his way. What's your take on this, sir?
Well, we knew it wasn't going to end. It is the beginning of the feud, so to speak. And what we have here is the Hatfields and McCoys. And there's going to be a rumble at the OK Corral in Hungary.
I have to agree with you. I think they, meaning Red Bull and the gang, they are just bitter. They are suffering from double bitterness of Max crashing, and on top of that, Lewis winning. This is motor racing. Some of us even remember a Toro Rosso crashing into a Red Bull and making a grown man cry. You remember that at Suzuka, sir?
One of my favorites.
Yes, sir. Same here. In Formula One, intensity is at its max. No pun intended, of course. Some of us remember Ayrton Senna having a similar high-speed crash. You guessed it. Against Nigel Mansell in Portugal. And this was despite the fact our Nigel was already shown the black flag, but both kept racing hard. And that's what we like. But the question was raised at that time, why race a guy when you're fighting for a world championship who has been shown the black flag? But this is what we like about Max and Lewis. They are hardcore racers and they're going to go for it. Dr. Marco, life may have a lot of energy at the Red Bull station, but we, the peeps of Formula One, the everyday people who watch Formula One, we want this kind of electrifying action and results on the track, not at the Old Bailey. And Dr. Marco, you know, he admits he is angry, still angry with the seven-time world champion because in his words, Hamilton plays with Max's health. The good doctor is now searching for F. Lee Bailey of Britain to turn this on-track incident into legal charade. I just wonder if he called Jacobi and Myers of Vienna when his German Golden Goose did a quacky job on Mark Webber in Istanbul, which used to be known as Constantinople. And I'm sure you remember that incident also.
Of course.
Yes. And you know, as if Max didn't have enough to say or show his being upset, which is totally understandable, Papa Jost, the boss, is also furious with Toto Wolff because back in the day they were best of buddies. And he is upset for not rebuking Hamilton's wild post-race celebration while his son was having his brain scanned in hospital. And what I have understood from reading reports that Mercedes were informed that Max was okay. It's not that, he was seriously injured and Lewis was celebrating, so that would be very bad. But this is Jos said, and I quote, "You don't celebrate a victory with such euphoria when your colleague is still in the hospital. As for Toto Wolff, we had good contact for years. He kept calling us with a honey mouth, and I think everyone knows why. But he didn't call yesterday, day of the race." And he continued, "He no longer needs to call us anymore." End of quote. But I think, you know, these are comments of the moment and tempers are hot. I think cooler heads will prevail by the time they are racing by the banks of a river Danube in Budapest. And sir, a man who knows all about high performance in the family, Ralf Schumacher, thinks it could just be the precursor for more of the same. And I have to agree with Ralphie on this one. He was quoted by a German publication, Sport Bild, saying, "The battle is coming to a head. I hope nobody gets hurt. Hamilton and Verstappen are slowly reminding me of Senna and Prost, the way they treat each other." What do you say, sir?
Well, it's true. It's going to remind us of Prost and Senna. We'll see on the television when the cameras are going to pan to Verstappen and Hamilton, and I'm afraid that they're not going to be kissing and hugging.
No, I think as the season wears on, we go into the last 6-7 races, this is going to get very, very hot. There is a lot of chatter on the web, not surprising, and I get the feeling blame is put on both drivers pretty much equally. Here is a sampling from both sides of the fence from Facebook. Obviously, we don't have the time to read 1,000 posts, so just one from each side. One person posted, "It was a premeditated maneuver by Verstappen to take Hamilton out, and it backfired on him. He deliberately cut across Hamilton and came off worse. He will think twice next time." And this last line, "he will think twice next time," I've heard this from a lot of people. Music from across the street was, "Whenever Hamilton is losing, he takes people out, just as Albon." In the final analysis, I say, this was a racing incident, not a torpedo fired from a Mercedes U-boat. Celebrate the great season and rivalry we are having. Let's see both Max and Lewis, plus Alonso on the podium in Hungary. There he can talk to Lewis about the 10-second pit stop, not a penalty. And that was Zinger of the Die. All this talk of muddy waters of going to court is not a happy tune. Do you think, sir, it will go down to the extent of they show up in some lawyer's office in Geneva or Paris?
No, I don't believe that. Those are just blathering, you know, that's typical Horner. But it will get intense and there will be meetings. There will be meetings. There will be driver meetings. This will be talked about. Finish the first lap. Please, everybody, finish the first lap. And everybody, I think, is going to calm down a little bit. But in the end, if Max is on pole and LCH is next to him, get ready for some slicing of intensity.
I think the race result will determine how the direction of this angerness and bitterness. If Max wins the race, they're going to be very happy. If Lewis wins the race, then I think they're going to get more pissed off and look at more angles to take some action. But, you know, time will tell. Now, sir, let's take a peek at the performance package of the Grand Prix gunslingers, like you said, at the OK Corral, or it could be the Hungarian Corral. After the British Grand Prix, Max has led 403 laps compared to 125 laps led by LCH, which proves Max has the package to deliver a championship to Red Bull this season. We all knew and know very well that he is very quick, no question on that angle. I think only driver who can beat him this season is Max himself. Over the years, I have seen this movie played out a few times before, where the fastest driver does not take the title for, you know, whatever reason. Now, just for giggles, Max's teammate Sergio Perez has led 26 laps, plus has a win. Even more impressive is Bottas. He has led 19, that's 19 laps. Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari has led 50 laps. Will anybody be surprised, given this performance, that George Russell is the teammate to Lewis Carl Hamilton next season, and Valtteri Bottas is teammate to Antonio Giovinazzi or Nicholas Latifi? What say you?
For sure, Bottas is in big trouble, but Toto, you know, being such a loving father figure, that he's promised Bottas that he'll get him a drive in Formula One next year, no matter what. So now there's talk about Bottas going to Alfa Romeo.
One fin replacing another fin. Sir, looking ahead to the Hungarian Grand Prix, which is the, this is when the, what they call summer break or whatever break is called, it starts. What are you looking forward to, yeah, apart from the rivalry? Do you think it's Hamilton's race or Max's?
It's going to be Max's race. Max, I mean, that's what's going to go. That's what's happening, is we're going to have tit for tat. It's going to be pretty scary stuff. We're going to see some intense driving. But, like I said earlier, things will calm down. Cooler heads will prevail. That I am positive, because we're all on a mission and we want to make it there in one piece. I do want to bring up a listener email, Nasser, while we're still on this LCH Max Verstappen scenario, because everybody's still talking about this. This has really been big, and that's why the intensity in the Hungaroring is going to be out of control. Even Tokyo will be envious of the kind of machismo activity we will be having in Hungary. So let me read. This is from Ken Tennyson. Not sure where he's from, but his English is very, very good. So Ken writes, "Mr. Rogers, after listening to your most recent podcast, you say that Lewis knew exactly what he was doing and you enjoyed every minute of it. Am I to believe that you think Lewis purposely punted Max off the track, put him in the hospital, celebrated to the maximum, and that you support the move? Come on, man! That's despicable. Spinning somebody off track doesn't show testicles. It shows desperation. Max was crucified early in his career for being too aggressive and making too much contact. Now we have a clinical Max who hasn't received an on-track penalty point since 2018. And you're saying he should go back to his reckless teenage ways? Max could have been killed. You don't punt somebody off track when you're going 170 miles an hour. LCH lost a lot of my respect last weekend. Ken Tennyson." Thank you for the email, Ken. And of course, we've talked since, and we both hugged and love each other. And I thank him for listening. But it's fascinating stuff. This is going to go on for a while, Nass.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting fact he brings up, that Max has not had a penalty in a while, and that is true, and that is very, very impressive. Max has come a long way, which happens to all drivers with experience and maturity. The stakes are very, very high. You have somebody who is on the edge of having more world championships than Michael Schumacher, so he's not going to roll over and play dead. And then you have what you call a Dutch whippersnapper. He, you know, this is the first time in his young career that he has a package where he can deliver a knockout punch to anybody who comes in his way. And so whoever wins is going to be fantastic for motor racing. And we shall see. And, you know, people are already talking about saying that let's hope Netflix was at the British Grand Prix. So we'll have to see how this thing pans out. But I do see more intensity. And obviously, nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. But I will be very, very surprised. A Red Bull gets in contact with a Mercedes. The Mercedes will be of Lewis Hamilton. And there's a chance maybe Sergio Perez will try to pull a fast one on Lewis and things will happen. Because he's a pretty aggressive driver too. And you know, if Lewis is second and somebody's trying to put in third, that's a huge loss of points. So I see some more argy-bargy. And we shall find out as the season progresses. But also my thanks to this gentleman, Ken, for taking the time to write to us and also for listening.
Me too. Outstanding. Send the emails over, nasser@f1weekly.com.
And hate mail to clark@f1weekly.com.
Gracias, muchacho.
Okay, sir. Shall we move on to some other Formula One item?
Absolutely. Let's continue the educational process.
Not Formula One, but motorsports. And this was some sad news, and this is now happening, unfortunately, Clark. We're getting up in age where, on a regular basis, some name we grew up with is passing away, and it makes me very, very sad. This time last week, Jean-Pierre Jousseau passed away. Another name from the 60s through 80s has departed. Jousseau was 84 years old. Though he never made it to F1, he won the Le Mans race twice, Le Mans 24 hours, of course, in 1978 in a Renault Alpine with Didier Pironi, long gone himself. 2 years later, he won again, this time with Jean Rondeau in a Rondeau, and I understand Mr. Monsieur Rondeau is the only driver to win in his own car. And there's an a sad story there. You know, Pironi got killed in a boating accident, Colibri, in his Colibri. And Jean Rondeau, he was at a rail crossing, waiting for the rail to pass, and then he saw a police car do what you call and go through the crossing, and he tried to follow, and the SNCF train hit him, and he was killed on the spot. Going back to the life of Jean-Pierre Jousseau, he was also part of the original Matra team, which is of huge interest to me. In 1968, driving a Techno, he won the prestigious Monaco Formula 3 race against the likes of Ronnie Peterson and François Sivet. He was French Formula 3 champion in 1970. In 1972, he was second behind Mike Hillwood, who was also known as Mike the Bike, in the European Formula 2 championship. And in Formula 2, he also drove for Mr. Ron Dennis. And Jousseau finished third in the 1982 Dakar Rally on his debut driving a Mercedes. So very sad to hear his passing away. And rest in peace, Monsieur Jean-Pierre Jousseau.
Thanks, Nasser. That was outstanding. And why don't we cheer everybody up now before Motorsports Mondial with Louche on the Loose and his thoughts on all the controversy.
Hello, Formula One Weekly. This is Lucien Byfield from South Australia with Louche on the Loose. Well, NASA gave me some team orders to discuss the Max and Lewis crash and also to take a trip down memory lane regarding Weber and Vettel in Turkey 2010. Will I do a Bottas and just comply? Or will I do my own thing and exercise what Nigel Roebuck called the bastard quality? Which is the quality all champs possess, apparently. I might do a Lewis instead and somehow look as though I am a team player and appear to follow the instruction, but will develop some mystery understeer when it suits me, as it did so often for the so-called clean driver whenever Nico Rosberg tried to pass him. Clean driver? My butt. I must refrain from a rant, but I want you so much. But, hey, Clark, you seem to think that being a bastard is a good thing, as it is showing balls. Yes, I am still listening, mate. So, I must preface. I am not a Hamilton fan, nor a Verstappen fan. I prefer clean drivers who are respectful and never do anything wrong, like Fernando Alonso. Cough, splutter. But seriously, none of the greats were always good boys. Even my hero Prost, who, a few times in his career, made a balls up of trying to be tough. Keke Rosberg confirmed this after Japan 89, stating that while Prost had said he was no longer going to leave the door open for Senna to just bully him, he didn't have it in him to be that way. So when he did make a half-hearted block attempt, it was pretty poorly executed. Oh, okay, sorry, I just heard the pit radio telling me to stick to the plan. So Max, well, he is a dirty driver, and I don't think that will ever change. And he will certainly not cower to Hamilton's post-race guilt-induced play at being tough. So I expect carnage and lots of it. But I must address this myth that Hamilton is a clean driver and always a victim of the system when it doesn't go his way. Now, Hamilton is so good that he knows how to position his car, ease off the brakes, develop understeer, as he calls it, when he wants to shove an opponent out the way. Just ask Nico Rosberg about that at Japan and Kota in 2015, to name but two examples. And he also knows how to weave, break the toe, think Kubica in Malaysia a decade ago. Oh, and how to lie. Sorry, I mean to be misled. See Australia 2009. Oh, and for us Aussies, we were horrified when Hamilton nearly put Danny Ric in the wall in Monaco 2016, and absolutely nothing was said or done about it. Now, Max has performed his weaves, blocks, and dangerous moves from day one, and doesn't give a flying what anyone thinks. But Hamilton does care deeply what people think, and I have studied his psychology and body language from day one, and he is an open book. The thing about Hamilton and his clean driver tag that he has somehow got despite being ultra professional at being an ass when others want him to pass is that he has not had his own Senna at Suzuka 1990 moment or a Schumacher, there's so many to choose from. He hasn't had any of those moments until now. What happened in the UK in the 2021 Grand Prix was proof that Hamilton, like Senna and Schumacher before him, can get rattled and a little desperate, and having had a large portion of his career out front in the best machinery, was and is a little race rusty. I don't care what anyone says, Hamilton's move was dirty, desperate and potentially life-threatening. Thing is, Max has been that way all along, and with two drivers like this in the same race, fireworks were and are inevitable. So, the team's reaction. Well, it amuses me so much that, like little children, both Horn Dog Horner and Toto Schwarzenegger cried foul and called up the wrong guy, Michael Massey. Now, for one, I love how Massey handles these little brats by not giving a damn what they say and just dismissing them calmly every time. But how do these ultra-successful team bosses not know that Massey is not the guy to protest to? Well, it beats me. It was so childish, for I'm sure that everybody involved in any form of verdict leading to penalties decision-making process was very aware of what went on and were right on top of it like a rash. I usually do not like Horner, for he has built a reputation as a sore loser when his team loses and a cocky upstart when things are good, and his treatment of Renault is unforgivable, it must be remembered. But Toto sending emails with a diagram to Massey, who knows he's shite? It is just pathetic. But for once, I did agree with Horner and his post-crash comments. My personal opinion on the crash is that Max was crowding Hamilton and had been weaving a little too, and over the course of the year had been very aggressive whenever Hamilton was near him. Hamilton has done it many times throughout his career too, just slightly less obviously, but Hamilton was never going to make that corner, and much like Jacques Villeneuve on Shuey in Jerez 97, things were not all as they appeared. For me, it was Max's corner, but I love how Hamilton does not take it lying down. He is a British bulldog and he just will not give up, and I love him for that. Purely objectively, this biffo is fantastic for the sport, but I do not think that a driver who takes out another competitor, especially when that man is his title rival and ahead on points, should be allowed to win the race. If you end a driver's race and he winds up in the wall and then in hospital, I'm sorry, you have no right winning that day. Without a red flag, Hamilton would have limped to the pits, possibly lost a lap or two, and never won. Oh, his luck, just as in San Marino this year, and many other times throughout his career. His penalty was not a penalty in the end, was it? Now let's go back to Turkey 2010. I had never seen enough in Mark Webber until Germany 2009 to believe he ever had the true number one quality needed to win races and to fight for a title. But in early 2010, he had the upper hand on Sebastian Vettel, that is. So much so that a resigned Horner even stated on TV that Webber was on a purple patch. It was clear that the impetuous upstart that was Vettel back then was the team's favourite and the one supposed to be doing the winning. Mark was ahead in Turkey, we all know the story, and with Vettel being allowed to run on full beans with the McLarens of Hamilton and Button closing in, Red Bull, in their wisdom, decided to hold Mark back and issue team orders to let Vettel through. Mark duly complied, but unlike Bottas, who practically offers Hamilton his girlfriend's bedroom door key, Webber backed off just enough for Vettel to get past. Of course, Vettel, the golden-haired child who could do no wrong, feeling entitled, just eased past and literally pulled over on Webber before the move was completed, displaying his entitlement that led to his expectation that Webber would just hit the brakes and offer no challenge. Then and now, there are two ways of looking at it all, and everyone has their own opinion, but the way the team handled this was so unprofessional and proved without a shadow of a doubt that Vettel was the young messiah for Red Bull, and Webber was fast becoming a thorn in his side. And I use the word fast intentionally. Open cuddles and vocal support in favour of Vettel from the head honchos at RBR put a weight on Webber's back that he could never overcome. It takes a tremendously mentally strong man to not get affected by team favouritism, and Webber was a heavier, taller, older and less considered driver in the team too, so he really had it all up against him. Oh, and he was not from the RBR program either, and only considered a great number two. We would see evidence of this number two vibe on many occasions, notably from Webber sarcastically saying so after a win in Britain that year. But I'm not going to go into all of the details, for there is so much fuel to this story. But what is clear is when a team boss or head honcho believes their golden boy is right, they will fight for them, even to the exclusion of facts, truth, and even their second driver. Now, with Britain 21 in mind, today, if Horner was in the reverse situation, he would fight for Verstappen had he done what Hamilton did. And Toto would do exactly the same had Hamilton been in the wall. And in this out-of-whack PC age we are in, had Hamilton been punted out in Britain, the victim card would have been played to the full, and I know Max would not have been allowed to win. For those thinking I am being harsh, go back and review Britain 18, where Hamilton came second after a tangle with Kimi and refused to be interviewed in front of his supposed adoring fans that he cared so much about. And he later cried foul regarding deliberate tactics to not let him win and that Ferrari were doing something interesting, which is translation for cheating. Now, Hamilton is brilliant, but he is a sourpuss when he doesn't have it all his way. We must never forget. So, let's go to Hungary. Woohoo, bring it on. More of the same, please. But can we just have it go the other way in the luck department? Oh, please, dear God of Formula One, it isn't too much to ask. Well, that's it from me, Lucien Byfield in South Australia with Loosh on the Loose. Catch you later, guys.
Thanks, Loosh. Keep up the good work. The check's in the mail. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm David Coulthard, otherwise known as DC, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and we shall depart from Britain to Deutschland, Uber Alles, Germany, for DTM. They were in action at the Lausitzring. Swiss driver Philip Ellis took his first victory in the series, driving a Mercedes. Alexander Albon was fifth in his Ferrari, and Timo Glock, remember him?
My buddy?
He was 11th in his BMW, or as the natives would call it, BMW. Mercedes won the second race of the weekend, also with local driver Maximilian Goetz at the wheel. Liam Lawson, who is the next big thing from New Zealand, was second in both races. He is also racing in Formula 2 as a Red Bull Junior. And of course, because of this, he was not driving a Mercedes. He races a Ferrari in DTM, so which is good. And this kid is very, very talented. Formula E, they were in London town. Local lad Jake Dennis was the winner on Saturday. He drives for Michael Andretti's BMW team. Sunday's race was also won by a British driver. This time it was Alex Lynn for the Indian Mahindra team. Next we go to IndyCar Racing and NBC. Good news for fans of America's top open wheel series. Mr. Penske has successfully, no surprise there, negotiated a TV deal with the Peacock Network. Most of the races will be on free-to-air television, which is very good for the fans and the series. And sir, your favorite, Helio Castro, Nevis, back in Indy full-time next season. Full-time Indy winner will drive for the team that took him to victory in that historic race this May at the Brickyard, and no driver has won the 500 five times. And wouldn't that be amazing, Mr. Rogers, if he can do a Dave Brubeck and take five at Indy 500? What say you?
That would be exciting. It'd put him right up there. And, you know, maybe him and LCH could have a meeting of the steering wheels.
There you go. Now we come to Faces Going Places. This was very impressive, and I really enjoyed on the YouTube over the weekend. Today we have a 16-year-old chap from England by the name of Oliver Bierman. And over the weekend at Imola, in the Italian Formula 4 series, he delivered a keg of victories, winning all three races to extend his consecutive race wins in this series to 8. Montoya's son Sebastian is also racing in this series and is pretty competitive, so that's good. And Monty was there also at Imola, so it was good to see him there. Bierman should be getting a call from Dr. Marco soon, as he is also leading the German F4 championship. So that's very impressive. And young, 16 years old, so that's all very, very good. Speaking of Dr. Marco, his American cowboy from Houston, Texas, Jack Crawford, went total hee-haw in the Euro Formula Series by winning race 1 and 3, and they were also at Imola, you know, support event to the Italian F4 was support event, I guess, to this series, because these are bigger cars, Formula 3 cars, basically. In the second race, Crawford, his nickname is Jetpack. In the second race, he was very impressive, fighting his way to a very close second place finish behind Czech driver Roman Stanek. These races, both the Euro Formula is basically a series which is, for all practical purposes, Spanish F3, no problem there. And the Italian F4, they are available on YouTube if anybody is interested. Next, Mr. Rogers, something of much interest to me, and I may try to go there. Formula One exhibit at the Peterson Museum. This is on now in L.A. This is from the cars and from the selection of Senor Juan Gonzalez. You can call him Speedy Gonzalez, but he is chairman of the board at a company called Mission Foods, a McLaren sponsor in Formula One and IndyCar racing. As they say at American Express, membership has privileges. And Mr. Rogers, you know, the season finale of IndyCar racing this year is in Long Beach, so I'm very in late September or early October, so I'm very, very tempted to fly cross-country and check out the Peterson Museum and attend the IndyCar racing. Do you have any plans or agenda to go to the Long Beach Grand Prix?
No, I don't, because of some of my feet issues. But certainly, if you need to go to Long Beach, let me know as soon as possible.
Yes, I'm planning on some travel agenda between now and for end of the month. I was planning to come to California anyway, and there is a good chance that I may be based in Santa Cruz for a few weeks to go to SoCal, so we can give you a free ride if you want to come with us. you know, as they said, Greyhound, leave the driving to us, so we can offer that services for you.
How kind.
Yeah, well, it's a limited time offer. Okay, sir, Interlagos may be replaced by Losail. There is talk on the street and great expectations in Qatar, or Qatar as the natives would call that nation, that GP will come lately to town. Delta Dawn is a very nice tune, but Delta variant is sickening. Folks in Doha, capital city of natural gas-rich nation, are hoping the MotoGP venue will get a Grand Prix, as things are not looking very healthy for races in Brazil, Mexico, and there are even concerns about the Japanese Grand Prix. And Joe Sayward is reporting in his blog that the date of the U.S. Grand Prix, for which I've already bought airline tickets, the date may be changed to November as a doubleheader to coincide with Mick Jagger going Start Me Up at COTA. And I'm sure you heard that Rolling Stones are performing at Circuit of the Americas.
I did not. Sorry, but I unsubscribed to my Rolling Stones newsletter a number of years ago.
No worries. Yeah, they confirmed, I think it's in November. That's hence the talk of changing the date and do a doubleheader in Texas, which will be fantastic. And if that happens, I would like to see Keith Richards do the post-race interview, especially if Lewis Hamilton wins the race. What say you?
That would be the best interview ever, forever, forever. I mean, Frost, I don't care who you're talking about, this would be the greatest.
Yes, and they have a lot of things in common, you know. They're both British, and they're both highly successful, and they both like to hang out in L.A.
Peace out, my brother.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so there you have it, Mr. Rogers, another podcast in the books on the digital airwaves. And the numbers are counting, man. We're approaching 900. And it will make me very, very happy if we can reach 1001 Arabian Nights and F1 Weekly podcast.
We will fight till the very end, Nas. We never give up over here at F1Weekly.com. So once again, an outstanding Motorsports Mondial. I want to thank Ken for his email and everybody else who thinks about emailing. I want to thank Loosh for his opinion. Keep up the good work. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.